I think that you're seeing a trend broadly towards audiences celebrating movies that aren't just the same old Hollywood story.
A South Korean film takes the Oscar for Best Picture, and many agree that it changes everything in the movie business. This is Tuesday, February 11th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Also ahead, the United States charges several Chinese military officers with hacking into U.S. credit reporting giant Equifax and then stealing the personal data of nearly half of all Americans. The number of deaths from a coronavirus outbreak in China is topped 900. The Academy Awards program was held Sunday night. It was mostly characteristic, with evenly distributed Academy Awards among men and women in many categories. And though minorities were mostly excluded, there were at least one major surprise: the award for the best motion picture of the year.
And the Oscar goes to Parasite.
It was a big night for South Korean filmmaker Bong Joon-ho, who won four Academy Awards, including Best Director and Best Picture, for his film Parasite, a dark satire on social inequality in South Korea. One line of the positive reaction to the choice was that it had immediately changed the way things were going to happen in the U.S. movie industry from here on in. I spoke with Tom Noonan about that. He's a movie and television producer in Los Angeles and a lecturer at the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television.
Parasite winning Best Picture was beyond a game changer for the Film Academy, but for Hollywood, and I suspect even moviegoers worldwide. What it does is it kicks open the door of visual arts so that it's not restricted to being celebrated strictly because of an English language component. Finally, the Academy and Hollywood at large is recognizing that great movies and great stories exist universally, and one doesn't have to have them spoon-fed to them in the English language for them to be appreciated. It is kind of remarkable that it came down to two movies that were not made in the United States that were likely going to win Best Picture last night. One movie was 1917, which was the odds-on favorite to win Best Picture. Obviously, that was made in the UK. And then Parasite, of course, a South Korean film. So I think that you're seeing a trend broadly towards audiences celebrating movies that aren't just the same old Hollywood story.
So what kind of changes do you expect in the future?
The biggest change I think we'll see for the future, given Parasite's win, is an aggressive exploration of other narratives, other filmmakers, other talent, that exist in pockets of pop culture worldwide. You know, South Korea is known for being a hotbed of creativity, innovation, and excitement in the world of not just film and TV, but of music as well and fashion. And there's obviously other centers of culture, booming culture around the world, and it's our time now to really look at that and celebrate that.
Why did it take so long for this to happen?
There's always been this sort of parochial assumption that the Academy Awards are an American award show, and that there's a category for an award that's outside of the United States, which used to be referred to as foreign language, which is this year turned to international films. And oddly enough, the international film that also made it into the Best Picture category succeeded at winning in both, both as the best international feature film and the best picture of the year, generally. I think just like anything, the competition, when it's homegrown, when it's grown originally in Los Angeles and then across the United States and then around the world, it takes time. I think that people would have assumed it would take less than 92 years, But it's these things happen when they're supposed to happen, and I think everyone's thrilled about it.
Tom Noonan is a movie and television producer in Los Angeles and a lecturer at the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Taiwanese people are leading an Asian face mask craze this month to ward off threats from a deadly virus they fear will jump from its nearby source country, China, into a local population that was already extra cautious about getting sick. The Philippine government Monday urged the Supreme Court there to cancel the franchises of the country's top broadcaster, a move slammed by opposition lawmakers and activists as an attack designed to intimidate independent media. Pakistan says UN General Secretary General Antonio Guterres will visit Islamabad next week to attend an international conference marking 40 years of Afghan refugees' presence in the country. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter. VOA Asia continues. The U.S. Justice Department announced Monday that four members of the Chinese military have been charged with hacking into the computer networks of the U.S. Consumer Credit Reporting Agency, Equifax, and stealing trade secrets and the personal data of nearly half of all U.S. citizens. At a news conference Monday, U.S. Attorney General William Barr, along with FBI Deputy Director David Baldich, told reporters the Chinese nationals were members of the Chinese Army's research arm and have been charged with conspiracy to commit computer fraud, economic espionage, and wire fraud. Barr said the hack, first discovered in 2017, was one of the largest data breaches in U.S. history. The indictment alleges the hackers obtained the names, birth dates, and social security numbers of 150 million Americans and the driver's licenses of at least 10 million. The attorney general said China's involvement in this type of hack is not new.
Our cases reveal a pattern of state-sponsored computer intrusions and thefts by China, targeting trade secrets and confidential business information. Indeed, about 80% of our economic espionage prosecutions have implicated the Chinese government. And about 60% of all trade secret theft cases in recent years involve some connection with China.
The criminal charges were filed in Atlanta, where Equifax is based. The accused hackers are based in China and none is in custody, but U.S. officials nonetheless view the charges as powerful deterrents to foreign hackers and a warning to other countries that U.S. law enforcement has the capability to pinpoint individual culprits behind hacks. The announcement comes as the Justice Department steps up its prosecution of Chinese espionage cases amid trade tensions between Washington and Beijing. The Trump administration has warned against what it sees as the growing political and economic influence of China and efforts by Beijing to collect data on Americans and steal scientific research and innovation. The administration has also been pressing allies not to allow Chinese tech giant Huawei to be part of their 5G wireless networks due to cybersecurity concerns. Happening now in Asia, Japan launched a second complaint at the World Trade Organization Monday over support South Korea gives its shipbuilding industry, thus intensifying a wider dispute between the two Asian countries. Remember to stay up to date with VOA. You are listening to VOA Asia. The number of deaths from a coronavirus outbreak in China has topped 900. The Director General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said Monday that the spread of coronavirus between people who had no history of travel to China could be the spark that becomes a bigger fire. In recent days, he said, we've seen some concerning instances of onward transmission from people with no travel history to China. He cited new cases in Britain as well as in France. Tedros said an advanced WHO team of medical experts have arrived in China Monday to help investigate the outbreak. U.S. President Donald Trump said Monday he's expecting the coronavirus outbreak to disappear in April because of the warmer weather. The heat, generally speaking, kills this kind of virus, he said. Also Monday, Chinese President Xi Jinping made a rare visit to a hospital in Beijing. Speaking with healthcare workers and patients, Xi donned a blue mask during his visit to the Beijing Ditan Hospital, the designated institution treating the coronavirus. Chinese health officials reported 97 new deaths Sunday, pushing the total to 908. There were also 3,062 new cases, which reversed a multi-day downward trend that had brought hopes containment measures were working. In Japan, a cruise ship remains in quarantine in Yokohama with 66 new cases reported Monday, more than doubling the number of known cases on board. The Diamond Princess was ordered to remain isolated last week after a passenger who got off the ship in Hong Kong tested positive for the virus. The center of the outbreak is China's Hubei province, where millions remain under lockdown and people are complaining of food shortages. Commerce official Wang Bin said Sunday that there are poor logistics, price increases, and labor shortages. China's central bank said that starting Monday, it would make available 300 billion yuan to help businesses involved in fighting the epidemic. Economist Nicholas Lardy is with the Peterson Institute for International Economics. I asked him about damage to both the Chinese and overall world economy being affected by the virus outbreak.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt the first quarter GDP in China is going to be very slow, maybe something in the 4%, 4.5% range, down dramatically from the 6% of the fourth quarter of last year. But I think there will be a substantial recovery as we move through the year. Of course, that's conditional on bringing the virus under control over the next few weeks. If the virus is not brought under control in the next few weeks, the number of businesses that will reopen will be limited, and the negative effect on GDP will last significantly beyond the first quarter.
What are the main effects of the outbreak of coronavirus? Is it just China's international business, or is it domestic business as well?
I think it's both. Certainly, many domestic businesses closed. Some are still closed. So production is being lost, not all of which can be made up when things get back to normal. And Chinese tourism is obviously down dramatically, which has a very large effect on Thailand, Hong Kong, and countries in Southeast Asia, where Chinese tourists are a very, very important part of the domestic industry, the domestic tourist industry. So it's both domestic and international. It's also international because China's demand for imports is down significantly. We've had a reduction in transportation, and with factories closed, their demand for intermediate goods and inputs that they need is down significantly. Remember, China does import a lot of oil, but it also imports lots and lots of what economists call intermediate goods, that is, goods that are used in the production of other goods. And many of these goods come from East Asia or Southeast Asia, particularly Korea, Japan, Taiwan. So the exports of those countries to China are down significantly, and that will have an adverse effect on their growth.
Is there anything the Chinese government can do?
Well, they're doing quite a bit. I mean, they got a very slow start, and some would say a misguided start. But now they certainly are mobilizing resources to try to slow the spread of the virus. And the number of new cases has now been declining for several days, which could be a good omen if it continues. It would suggest that the virus will be brought under control over the next few weeks.
I don't know whether this has expanded or not over the past few hours or so, but I did see that Fiat Chrysler was talking about the possibility of shutting down its plants in Europe and elsewhere because they couldn't get Chinese parts, and that's the way the supply chain was set up. How far does this extend?
Well, it's very important. China, in the auto sector, China is the biggest producer of auto parts, and their parts go to Europe, obviously South Korea, and the United States. So if those factories remain closed for much longer, that will begin to impinge on the ability of some of these companies to continue in operation. Remember, the style these days is to carry very little inventory, rely on just-in-time delivery. But when the production gets shut down in China, then the effects are transmitted to the producers of automobiles fairly quickly.
What is the worst-case scenario worldwide if there is not an end to the virus scare?
Well, I think the worst-case scenario worldwide is that, you know, most estimates are now that global growth will probably not decline by much more than a tenth or two-tenths of a percentage point. If the virus continues to spread in China and China remains largely shut down, then I think the effect on the global economy could be several times larger.
Leading to what?
Well, I would certainly have the potential to push some countries into recession. I mean, some of the countries in Europe are already going relatively slowly, barely having their noses above water. And if you get a shutdown of the auto industry, for example, or closure of a lot of plants, in, particularly in Germany, it will probably push Germany into a recession.
Economist Nicholas Lardy is with the Peterson Institute for Economic International Economics. Coming up, the U.S. political scene has moved to the state of New Hampshire. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Journalist in disputed Kashmir urged the Indian government Monday to allow them to report freely and express concern about alleged police harassment since the region's semi-autonomy was rescinded in August amid an unprecedented lockdown. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. VOA Asia continues. The northeastern state of New Hampshire votes on a Democratic Party nominee for president Tuesday. The vote is the nation's second contest for the Democratic nomination since Iowa conducted its caucuses last week, but the first primary of the year. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti is in New Hampshire, where she spent the week talking to numerous voters who explained why they're waiting to make up their minds.
And would you like a bag?
Diane Savoy is choosing three pieces of fudge for her 95-year-old mother. As a New Hampshire primary voter, she's deciding between Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Her final decision adds up to one factor.
Who can beat Trump?
The Granite State Candy Shop has been in the Bart family for nearly 100 years.
You got 200 already? Yeah.
Owner Jeffrey Bart says he's looking for someone to run the country the way he runs his business, fiscally responsibly.
We're all frugal Yankees up here, and, you know, we hate to see a dollar go to waste.
Here, the people's independent streak mirrors the way they vote. Democrats and independents can register to vote on the same day as the primary. But this is New Hampshire, where the weather is predictable. The voters, not so much.
I'm still not decided.
The stakes are a little higher, I think. So it's important to get it right.
Undeclared voters make up 43% of the state's voters.
I'll probably make up my mind when I'm actually voting.
Engineer Andrew Mertinock works at Waypoint Robotics, a New Hampshire startup. He's ignoring the polls, which show which candidates can beat President Donald Trump.
The most powerful thing you can do is vote for a candidate that resonates with you and represents what you believe and let the chips fall where they may.
4 years ago, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire primary. Brothers Jesse and Alex Curry want to guarantee him a repeat because of climate change.
I think this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get someone like Sanders in office.
Analysts think Sanders is leading or is tied with Buttigieg, followed by former Vice President Joe Biden and Senators Elizabeth Warren and Klobuchar. We will know the winner on Tuesday after the first-in-the-nation primary. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
This news break from VOA Asia. Alibaba Group Holdings said Monday its affiliate Ant Financial's MyBank unit would offer 20 billion won in loans to companies in China in light of the coronavirus outbreak with preferential terms for Ube firms. Alibaba made the announcement in a statement posted on its official Weibo account. You're listening to VOA Asia. A Texas-based startup is giving consumers a unique way to memorialize their loved ones by turning their cremated ashes into diamonds. Human ashes and even those from pets provide the starting material for diamonds that are grown in a laboratory. Tina Trin interviews the founder of Enterneba, the company that provides this service, and a pet owner who's turning her dog's ashes into a diamond.
You know, I really only had Chloe for 4 years, but the impact she made on my life, she completely changed my life.
For Dory Herman, the decision to adopt her dog Chloe opened her world to a vast community of dog lovers and ultimately inspired the charity work she does today. That's why when Chloe passed away, Herman decided to turn some of her ashes into a diamond.
I can't think of a better way to keep your pet with you and sort of honor their memory in a beautiful way instead of leaving them in their ashes sitting on my shelf somewhere.
This was like a new color that we developed.
The process is made possible through a lab-grown diamond startup called Eterneva.
We're actually extracting the carbon from ashes or hair. We could do hair or fur, and then that is what we're growing the diamond from.
Lab-grown diamonds have the same chemical composition and clarity as mined diamonds and are gaining attention as a socially responsible alternative.
Extreme pressure and temperature, growing a diamond above ground in these remarkable machines that are replicating the Earth's conditions.
Eterneva CEO Adele Archer was already working in the lab-grown diamond industry when a personal friend and mentor passed away.
Tracy was like a second mom to me. I mean, she was one of my closest people in my life, and so I received some of her ashes. And so it was with a diamond scientist. He said, you know, hey, there's carbon in ashes. What we could do is extract the carbon from Tracy's ashes, and we could grow you a diamond from that carbon.
Lab-grown diamonds start as a sliver of diamond seed and take about 8 months to form.
We extract the carbon from someone's ashes, we mix with generic carbon, we create a carbon disc, and then over time, that carbon starts depositing on that seed, and it grows into a rough diamond.
The result is an extremely personal piece of jewelry, but these gems will cost you. Archer says customers spend on average $7,000 to $8,000 for a diamond.
If you've experienced a very close and important loss that was somebody you lost too soon, you tend to get this right away. It's more about the closeness of the relationship to you and how you want to carry them with you every single day.
It's a way for me to look at her and smile in the same way as when she was here. It's not going to be a sad thing at all. It's going to be, Chloe's here. Chloe lives forever.
For some, the sentimental value is apparently priceless. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency's new solar orbiter is being readied for a planned February 9th launch from Cape Canaveral in Florida. Its mission, a collaboration between the ESA and NASA, includes making close-up observations of the sun from high latitudes, which will allow the spacecraft to snap the first-ever photos of the sun's polar regions. At its closest approach, the spacecraft is expected to come within 42 million kilometers of the sun's surface. The spacecraft has 10 state-of-the-art instruments that will capture high-resolution images of the sun and its outer atmosphere, called the corona, as well as measure its magnetic field and the solar wind. ESA says the Solar Orbiter's mission will provide unique insight into how the sun works within its 11-year solar cycle and how it might be possible to produce more accurate space weather forecasts. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Make sure to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Visit our VOAnews.com program page. See us on YouTube, follow us on VOA Asia Twitter, and let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email at VOAasia@VOAnews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, and our team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.